From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Near Eastridge.
Sunset.
Eastside. San Francisco.
Border of Milpitas.
San Jose.
Coming up, we talk about a problem that goes largely unseen, human trafficking.
Let's call it what it is. It's modern day slavery.
When you quit your job, you have to run away and be scared for your life. Those should not be the conditions under which you quit your job.
We'll look at victimization from inside and out and talk with cops struggling to combat the issue.
The hardest part for me is to walk out of that place and know I left somebody and I know they wanted to go.
San Francisco is one of the nation's trafficking centers. We'll see what's being done about it today on Cross Currents. It's one of crime's most hidden industries, human trafficking. With an estimated 20 million victims around the world, it's often called modern-day slavery. Traffickers use sexual exploitation, fraud, and forced labor to keep victims powerless. And it's happening all around us, sometimes in plain sight, in restaurants, on street corners. California has been cited by the FBI as one of the nation's hotspots for trafficking, and San Francisco is one of the top 10 cities in the U.S. for trafficking. San Francisco has been recognizing this month as Human Trafficking Awareness Month in an effort to highlight the severity of the issue.
And during the rest of the month, we'll really help San Francisco combat the very serious problem of human trafficking.
Policymakers and advocates gathered in City Hall last week to launch a campaign that includes distributing anti-trafficking posters in schools, listing a help hotline in various languages. The posters are mandatory in places like airports, BART stations, and emergency rooms.
Unfortunately, in the line of work that I'm in, I meet victims of crime. I meet victims of human trafficking crimes, and every single one of them is just completely and utterly heartbreaking.
That's Melinda Haig, United States Attorney for the Northern District of California.
It's a problem in the country, and we're just not immune. We're not immune to it here in California or in the Bay Area. Unfortunately, there are people who prey on vulnerable people everywhere, and it's no different here than anywhere else in the country. So we have our share, unfortunately, of labor trafficking and sex trafficking, and unfortunately, it's around us, and we don't always recognize it.
Since 2010, the state of California has investigated thousands of human trafficking cases and arrested nearly 2,000 people. But it's a difficult process. Victims often don't come forward because of threats from their traffickers. Today, reporter Leela Day brings us one man's story.
Sonny is sitting on a bench in Golden Gate Park. He smiles when I see him. His eyes are dark, his flannel shirt well-pressed.
I like it to be a fisherman.
Especially
I like fishes.
The name Sonny suits him well. Light and uplifting. But it isn't his real name. He chose to use an alias and a translator, even though he speaks English. He wants to make sure the details are right.
So, what were you making as a fisherman in Indonesia?
Kalau untuk kapal lokal,
about $150 every month.
Every month. Kalau untuk yang
if I work in a foreign ship, it will be $350 per month.
So you prefer to work for a foreign ship?
Yeah.
Sonny lives here in San Francisco now, a long way from Central Java, where he grew up fishing. For 6 years, he worked on foreign ships, Japanese fishing companies that hired crews from different parts of Indonesia. Fishing is fast-paced work, repetitive.
Itu sekitar 2,000 panjang.
So every day, I throw 2,000 hooks.
So waktu kita membuang set.
So when we were setting the hook, It'll take us about 6 hours.
Sonny took a break from the work after his wife had their first son. When he was ready to go back, he called a local recruitment agency in Indonesia. They organized contract work for fishermen. Sonny says they helped him find work in the past, and they did it again.
They said that they're going to pay me $300 US every month.
Recruitment agencies like this one are common in Indonesia. There are more than 500 of them. Sunny signed a contract to work for 2 years in Hawaii, and a few weeks later, he boarded a plane.
And then from Australia to Fiji, flying. From Fiji to Western Samoa, flying again. From Western Samoa to American Samoa, flying again. From there, a ship picked me up.
From Samoa, Sunny switched to a smaller boat and was told that a different employment agency would get him his visa. He waited for the fishing ship and waited.
It's coming that they pick my gun.
So within that 3 days, they didn't give us food. So I was looking for food myself.
Where did you find food? How did you eat?
Terus di mana anda cari makannya?
Saya minta-minta ke kapal yang lain karena.
Oh, so I asked from other ship, folks from other ships, and because it's a fisherman solidarity, they give us food.
For 2 weeks they waited. More people boarded from the Philippines and Indonesia.
So this boat was really, really crowded.
When he finally was transferred, it was to a boat that wasn't mentioned in his contract. The captain took his passport and everyone else's. They started sailing towards Hawaii.
Jam 2 siang.
I start working at 2 p.m.
Sampai jam 3 malam.
Till 3 a.m. non-stop.
Sunny pushed himself hard. His contract promised him a bonus for every ton of fish he pulled in, $250 on top of his salary. But Sunny wasn't getting his bonuses. So from the boat, he called the agency that hired him back in Indonesia.
Padahal saya punya,
I had three numbers, cell phone, office, etc. None of the phones actually were working.
This is happening to Sunny. It's probably happening to a lot of other people.
That's Cindy Liu, an attorney at the Asian Pacific Islander Legal Outreach Center. Liu says she's heard of this disappearing agency situation.
I've had many Filipino clients recruited through these labor agencies in the Philippines, and they also incur a huge debt before they come over to the U.S., only to find out the jobs that are promised is something else, the conditions are different, and they call that agency back home, and all of a sudden it doesn't exist or it's gone.
Liu says most media coverage focuses on sex trafficking, but labor trafficking is an increasing problem. But it's only fairly recently that the U.S. even passed labor trafficking laws. Many cases never go to court. People just want to move on.
Most of our clients, again, their primary goals are to be safe and to be stabilized and usually to support their families in some way. It's the first thing that's on their mind is not usually, let me think about how I can go lock somebody up or how I can go sue somebody.
Sunny never considered breaking his contract. That would have meant a $1,000 fine, and that's almost 4 months of work. He needed the money. He had a daughter to think about back in Java.
Dibilang waktu itu kita operasi di daerah San Francisco.
Nanti kita. For about 17 days, he traveled east towards San Francisco. On the boat, things got worse. Some fishermen were Muslim, but they served a lot of pork for dinner, so Sunny wasn't eating much. If you look at Sunny's hands, you'll see that one of his fingers is crooked and scarred. While he's talking, he sometimes puts one hand over the other to hide it.
Hampir patah.
So my finger at the time is almost broken.
Saya bilang sama kapten, saya perlu dokter untuk mengobati jari saya.
Yeah, I told him I need a doctor.
There was no doctor on board, and the pain grew more intense. The vessel docked in San Francisco, and that's when Sunny saw a chance to run.
So the night before I took the passport, they were drinking, so they were all drunk. And this is a good time for me to just snuck in and just get my passport. So my friend also agree. So we say, okay, let's go get our passport and leave.
Sunny didn't have any idea where to go. He bought a calling card and phoned Indonesia. His family searched on Facebook to see if there were Indonesians near Sunny who could help, and they found someone. Eventually, a pastor contacted him.
Saya ceritakan semuanya sama dia.
I told the pastor everything.
Habis itu dia mencoba membantu.
And then he tried to help.
Siapa-siapa yang bisa membantu saya. Yeah.
Sunny ended up at the Asian Women's Shelter in San Francisco. where they helped him with food and clothing and took him to the hospital. But like most domestic violence shelters in the city, this one was only for women. So the organization convinced the Indonesian consulate to pay for Sunny to stay in a hotel instead of a homeless shelter. They also connected him with his lawyer. Finally, things started to change.
Kalau saya pikir kembali, saya waktu itu saya kayak diperbudak.
When I think about it, I felt like I was being enslaved.
Karena gaji saya dibayar tidak sesuai dengan agreement.
Because my salary was not according to the agreement.
Sedangkan bekerja 20 jam itu sungguh keterlaluan buat saya.
And working 20 hours, that's way too much. That's way too injustice, too unjust.
Today, Sunny's got a work visa. In 5 years, he can apply for a green card. He lives with his wife and now two children in San Francisco, not far from Golden Gate Park.
Anak saya, dia udah pergi sekolah. Dia juga senang karena ketemu saya setelah bertahun-tahun nggak ketemu.
My daughter goes to school and she's happy to be together because we haven't seen each other for a long time.
The captain was never prosecuted, and Sonny's not interested in pursuing it. He now works in a liquor store where he makes $13 an hour. And he has no plans to return to sea. For Cross Currents, I'm Leela Day.
We have a link to victim services at klw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. We're talking about human trafficking, the second most profitable criminal enterprise in the world after drug trafficking. It's estimated to rake in $32 billion a year. Last week, to bring awareness to the issue, U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of California, Melinda Haig, read aloud a few of the state's cases that are under litigation.
Here are just a few examples. United States versus Alvarez and Contreras. These defendants were convicted in connection with a scheme to recruit young, unsophisticated workers from a poor area of Mexico and lure them here with promises of jobs, better living conditions, and educational opportunities. Once in the U.S., however, these victims lived in squalor in a garage and worked long hours for little pay. U.S. versus Ding. The defendant in this case smuggled a Chinese national into the United States and forced her to work as a domestic service for a year before the victim came to the attention of law enforcement. United States versus Mahender Singh and Helen Singh. These defendants recruited teenage girls by promising money and a, quote, family-like atmosphere. Once the girls were in their clutches, however, the defendants maintained their control with force and threats of force and by fostering a climate of fear. They used the internet to advertise the services of their prostitution enterprise, which spanned from Sacramento to the San Francisco Bay Area. United States versus Valletto and Pierman. These gentlemen were charged in July of 2013 in connection with allegedly operating a large-scale marijuana grow in Lake County and keeping a 15-year-old girl in a so-called torture box. United States versus Wild. When two workers brought from Central America to Humboldt County to work in a marijuana grow asked to be paid, Mr. Wild allegedly shot and killed one of them, shot and injured the second, and chased the third through the forest around the marijuana grow the rest of the night. Mr. Wild has been indicted. These are allegations only, and the case is pending.
That's Melinda Haig, U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of California. We had more questions about how law enforcement is combating the trafficking issue locally, so KALW's Ben Trefney sat down with Sergeant Tony Flores, who works with the Special Victims Unit for the San Francisco Police Department. He asked Sergeant Flores what the department is looking for to determine if someone's being trafficked.
It's something that just doesn't look right. And we all see it. We kind of sometimes put our head in the sand, but sometimes when we're there, you're seeing it right in front of you. And it's basically their demeanor, that somebody's that, you know, they're very quiet, they're very timid. Sometimes, you know, they'll if you're asking them a question. I'll give you an example. So we do, once a month, we do massage inspections with the Department of Public Health, building inspectors, fire department.
At different parlors around San Francisco?
Yes. Yes. And we'll do these inspections. And this is where I will engage with the folks that are working there. And I'm asking them questions. And the questions that I'm asking them is, do you have your passport? Do you have your ID? If no, you know, okay, who has it? Oh, this other person. Well, why do they have your identification? Well, they said that I need to give it to them. Okay, all right. Do you sleep here? Yes, I do sleep here. Okay, all right. And are you fed here? Yes, but I have to pay for my food. And what if you don't have any money? Well, then I owe on the books. Okay, all right. And how many hours do you work? Oh, I work about maybe 14, 15 hours. Then you go inside and you're seeing these.
They could often be coached, I would imagine, on exactly what they should say. And they know the people who have forced them to be here perhaps much better than they know you.
Well aware of that. And you'll see, and back to initially was, how do I know? You're looking at this person, trying to look them in the eyes, and they're looking down, or they look over at the person looking at them for that response. I call it my father look. And you know exactly what I mean by that. It's like, you know, when you're in trouble, you said something, he gives you that look like, no, we're not going to beat you now. You're in trouble when we get out of here, when nobody else can see you. So when I see those indicators, and when we hear those indicators, you know, we definitely kind of react to them. I'll give them something to contact me, or I have their contact number, and I'll say, hey, maybe I'll call you later on when we're not here. Because inside those places, everything's being recorded.
Exactly. There's probably cameras there.
There are cameras all over the place.
It must be a really delicate moment when you have that recognition of a situation that seems like it could be trafficking, and you're trying to communicate to the person who is the victim without tipping off or changing what's happening for the criminal.
You know, I'm a jokester. You know, I laugh at life all the time. The hardest part for me is to walk out of that place and know I left somebody, and I know they wanted to go.
That's Sergeant Tony Flores with the Special Victims Unit for the San Francisco Police Department. Massage parlors are legal, and vending on street corners is pretty commonplace. How do you know, as just an average person walking around or seeing these places, which ones are shadier?
I think the best one, I think, would be, and I'm not telling anybody to go out there and, you know, be the law enforcement or take legal action, but it's when you're engaging, you know, you walk by somebody, you say hello, and you say, hey, how's it going? Oh, good. You've been, you know, have that conversation. Have that, as I give them 10 minutes.
Be human.
Give them 10 minutes.
San Francisco is a sanctuary city, but federally, the laws are a bit different. There's a reason why it's a sanctuary city. So what kind of rights can you offer to these people so that they could, let's say that you were able to just speak frankly with them and establish trust and say, this is what you can do and this is how long you can stay here. What exactly is the process then that people can count on from the city of San Francisco?
So now that we've identified, now that we're able to communicate with this individual and say, what's going on? And they tell us about these crimes that are going on. And as soon as I do, I said, tell you what, you know, you are a candidate to get this U visa, which gives the individual temporary residency within the United States. But it's not us that are giving them this. It's literally Homeland Security. And what it is if you are a victim of a crime within the United States, you're entitled to apply for this application. I'm telling them, hey, you have this right because you're a victim here, and that your helpfulness in this investigation, which normally you wouldn't have came forward to me and told me this because of your fear, and that is one of the fears that the controllers will use, is that if you say anything, I'm going to have you deported. If you say anything, I know you're here, but your family over here, they're going to get deported. So they'll use this tool, and it's a powerful tool. You know that fear, especially if you came from a country where they were torturing you or torturing your family or you escaped from that. You know, it means a lot. But they're exposing themselves to Homeland Security. You're saying, here I am. This is me. I came here, but I was a victim of a crime.
Does that mean that Homeland Security then will make the determination of whether it's valid or not to give them the U visa?
Absolutely.
Well, so some people could get deported when they apply for it.
No, they don't. They don't. If that was the case, I'd probably have less on my desk than I do now. And the captain of Special Victims Unit, the two lieutenants and myself are able to review these applications, and we'll look at them. I'll make my determination. I'll kind of get in hold of the inspector or sergeant that's handling the case. Hey, this person just applied for it. Were they cooperative? Were they helpful? What's the status of the case? And they'll say, yeah, you know, it was good, or no, they lied about the whole thing. And, you know, I'll put a little note on that and send it back. Or say the case was filed with the DA's office and then it's moving forward. And then I'll call the DA's office. I'll say, hey, we had this one. I'm forwarding it to you because you still, that was our handshake agreement, is that anything that they had, they would go ahead. And when we've gone to have several cases that maybe gone to trial or something like that, and this is brought up, well, the only reason you're testifying is because you wanted this U visa. And what I try to explain to them is, again, they could have just said, they don't have to be here. They have to help us, but what's the difference with saying, hey, I was beat up by an unknown person and call it a day, and you would still be eligible to get a U visa. And that's all you had to say. But again, the fraud is very minimal.
And you've never come across in your experience that when somebody's applied for a U visa with a case in which they were victim of a crime that they've been deported?
No. And trust me, I would have heard about it because I work with a lot of immigration attorneys and a lot of nonprofit groups, and we talk and all the time, constantly. Every day we're talking, and I would have heard about it.
That's Sergeant Tony Flores with the Special Victims Unit for the San Francisco Police Department. He spoke with KALW's Ben Trefney. Sergeant Flores handled more than 50 trafficking cases last year. He recently helped bust a fruit vending operation that trafficked Mexican teenagers.
And you can see, imagine that you're a 15-year-old kid that was smuggled within the United States. And no matter what we say, that fear sets in and says, hey, you know what? Something's bad's going to happen to me. The cops are corrupt. If you say anything, they're just going to throw you in jail and you're never going to see anybody again.
You can hear the story of how the SFPD discovered the operation, built trust with the victims, and solved the crime at our website. It's KALW.org. Just click on Cross Currents. That's all for today's edition of Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Isabel Angel, Julie Kane, Jasmine Lopez, Charlotte Silver, Jen Chien, Audrey Dilling, Chris Hoff, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Angela Johnston, Raisu Sussman, Melanie Young, and Stephen Short. Today's show was produced by Leela Day and engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our senior producer is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. We are listener-supported radio, and for that, we thank you. The music you're hearing is being played by Rebecca Rodman. She's a member of the group Dirty Cello, but on Saturday, she's playing solo as part of a benefit for the Marin Project. Rodman is one of 24 local performers taking part in this concert. Profits from both Saturday's show and a CD of the music will benefit Homeward Bound, Marin's main provider of shelter, job training, and residential services for people without homes. The Marin Project benefit performance takes place Saturday at the Marin Center Showcase Theater in San Rafael. There's a silent auction starting at 6 p.m. with the show at 7 p.m. All of that information is at KALW.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.